Hello, hello. Welcome to Season 4 of the Chicago Techies Podcast, the show that highlights the voices of Chicago innovators and their journeys. This season, we're shining a spotlight on founders, from bootstrap beginnings to bold visions. We're diving into what it really takes to build right here in Chicago. I'm your host, Cecilia Benitez. Thanks for tuning in. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the new season of the Chicago Techies Podcast. Last season, I told you that we were going to be focusing on founders this season four. So I'm super excited to be here today already with our first founder who's making some waves in the world of entrepreneurship here in Chicago. But we're excited to have you, Jill. Thank you for joining me. I can't wait to get started. So let's kick things off with a quick introduction. Can you share your name, your pronouns, where you're from, and maybe your role?
Awesome. Thanks, Cece. I'm excited to be here. This is a big moment to be at the top of the season. My name is Jill Miller. I am a she, her pronouns, and I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio, and have been in the Chicago area about 25 years. And I am the founder and CEO of Lunum.
Tell me a little bit about your career trajectory. Like, what was your career early on, and how did it lead you to where you are now as a founder?
Yeah, I mean, the exclamation point, right, is that no founder journey is ever like a straight line. So my career was varied. I studied in college German and international relations, which is an interesting topic with a lot of emphasis on World War II history and economics. Strangely, I wanted to be a nurse, and I came out a translation major. But after that, I started working in areas around process and factory floor automation. I was in automotive for a while. And then from about 2005 until 21, I sold and supported a lot of like CPG companies, consumer packaged goods, and food companies and pharma companies with factory floor automation that helped them to become more efficient or effective in their operations, drive bottom line results, and really was particularly interested in, you know, the hundreds, I'm assuming it's probably close to 1,000 factories I've been in different industries across the world. Really interested in the people and the stories on the plant floor of, you know, what it means to work somewhere, what the jobs are, how they contribute value, and really how do people sit at the intersection of automation and humanity? I mean, and 2020, 21, I was, you know, in part, I was probably, as a mom, maturing into having teenage girls and asking myself questions like, asking myself questions like, you know, what I want my kids working here, where, you know, in some of the places I was at, and the answer was no. I kept hearing, you know, industrial America is very particularly in like the middle market or the supplier layer below the CPGs or large brands. There is often very few women, very few people of color in leadership. And I kept hearing questions like, well, how do we get more women to work here? Or, you know, why don't we have, I would ask, you know, why don't we have any Black people in leadership? And people would say things like, well, they don't want to be here, which was a farce in many ways. But it started to lead me through 2020 and 21 into asking a lot of existential questions. I did a ton of travel during the first year of COVID. By 21, with everything that was going on, I started to really get stuck in my mind around, how are we always out there as companies saying, like, people are our most valuable assets? And, you know, we take care of our people, or we're the employer of choice, or we're going to go out and we're going to reshape our supply chain so that it's more equitable. And I was seeing a lot of really performative statements, but not a lot of actual action or measurement and monitoring of these things, where in the world I came from, right, you're running a line, you know, whether it's a cereal line or a toilet paper line, you have to measure and monitor, because those are dollars down the drain if you're not effective. And what I started to really clearly see was that the way that we look at people in organizations is not appropriate to create long-term value. It's overlooking job quality. And the ultimate effect, aside from business performance, is there's effects on the communities and the workers, which I really care about those individuals when they show up to work. So I started to ask myself, like, how do we overcome this performative approach to the way we talk about people if we're not really going to change? Because those performative statements in the marketplace were translating into, you know, changes in the stock market. You know, Starbucks was like, we're going to spend $800 million a year more on supplier diversity. But if you know the supply chain, you know that's like not possible.
That whole journey has a lot to do with where you are now. You know, it basically gives you all the knowledge so you can start your own company to support all these, you know, this organization. So tell me a little bit about Lunum and how it got started, essentially, from that background that you had.
Yeah, so Lunum was born in 2022 after about 9 months in 21, summer of 21, I left my role with no plan, a broken soul, no money. And I just decided, I don't know if I even decided, I don't know that it was a choice. It just happened. I could not stand by and wonder if the world could be different if I made a different decision about what I wanted to be doing every day. And overarchingly, it was, you know, I didn't want to look back in 10 years and wonder if I could have done better by my children and done something. So I left a career behind with no plan. And then I spent the next few months mostly trying to be outside of myself. And we'd had a lot of COVID stuff going on, and the world was crazy in 2020 and 21. Mm-hmm. And I needed like to be healed a bit. So I spent the first few months after I left my role on the west side of Chicago in East Garfield Park, mostly at a couple of organizations. One in particular was Above and Beyond, which is a recovery center, food pantry. And spent a lot of time out there every day just listening to the problems and probably what is, I don't know if it's still, but I'm guessing it is, one of the more gun violent neighborhoods in the United States. Mm-hmm. And really just shedding and showing up was amazing. And there was a day I realized, you know, one of the people in one of the groups I was helping to facilitate said something to me about, he said, you know, every day when you get off the train, we all cross the street. And these are 6'2" former gang members, formerly like a lot of them federal prison with some serious charges. And I'm looking at him and I'm 5'3". I'm not tiny, but I'm not, you know, I wouldn't have defended myself. And it occurred to me that somebody like that is afraid of me. And I think that was the moment I became an entrepreneur. That we live in a world where someone is afraid of me and that my presence in their community terrifies them enough that they know that if something happens to me in that community, that they will, he used the word hang for it. It was one of the most profound moments. And I remember staring back at the city and thinking, I'm 2.5 miles from one of the most beautiful, wealthiest cities in the world. And there are people dying in this neighborhood like a war zone. Mm-hmm. And in the big skyscrapers, there's people making a lot of money and stocks were closing at record highs. I remember hearing like Forbes 400 had like increased their wealth by a third over the first year of COVID. And I was like, we have to figure out how to change this. So I think Luna was born in that moment. And I don't know that I had every answer, but what I did know was we needed to figure out how to measure people differently so that we could lift all the boats. I truly believe we can solve some of the biggest social problems we have in this country if we figure out how to like get a consistent, accurate, and comparable way to measure things. And solve a business problem at the same time, because capitalism won't stop driving the train forward. And I spent time, I really didn't know. I was doing a ton of research trying to figure out like, what is the core of how do we overcome inequity, but do it in the way that works for capitalism so that we can really create progress. And then very early on, we met a couple of companies that, you know, just were really did. Their CFOs found what we were doing to be really interesting, which is how do we use size, scale, and influence of large organizations to measure and monitor the performance of everyone in their value chain around, you know, well-being of employees, opportunity for employees, wage quality, and tie that into what a business metric is, which is cost of poor retention, costs associated with bad workforce investments, not understanding root cause. So throughout the end of 21, really through 22, we started to build the platform, and we built it on my crazy idea of what we were going to do. At the time, I was also involved with the Breedlove entrepreneurship at the YWCA, which was is this beautiful program for helping Black females scale. I got to spend some time there, and that's where most of my income came from for that time, and in addition to waitressing. And we got volunteers, people came out of the woodwork to help us build the platform in the beginning, and it was duct tape and wire ties. And we got a little revenue and tested some things, and we got a couple customers. And then we moved into fundraise in 23, our first angel round. So it was really built on sheer force. Like it was like brute force. Like I am going to do this, and we are never going to turn back, and we'll get through the fog.
And this is your first time being a founder. So yeah. I'm curious not to get too ahead. I actually want to go back to that. Like, how did you even get started? Like, once you decided that you wanted to build a platform, like, what was your first step into saying, okay, you know what? Yes, I got to build this. I need to get a team. Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, you know, it was very interesting. The journey's been crazy, because the day that I decided, it was right around like end of summer, fall in 21. And I remember one of the first moments I realized I needed to build something was knowing, like looking at the demographics of who owned the wealth in the CPG value chain versus, which is not Black females, by the way, or underrepresented or women of color, versus how much money do these demographics spend on groceries and consumer packaged goods. That was a watershed moment for me. I was like, oh, if you're a Black woman in this country, anything you buy, there is less than 1% of a chance that someone who looked like you profited heavily from the value chain. And it's under 5% for anyone who's a female across the board in demographics and varying and in different demographics. And there was a day where I like had this, I was like, wow, I wonder what Black women spend on groceries. And this was maybe the beginning of it. And I went downtown, I was working at Sundays on State, like helping out the Chicago Loop Alliance. And I got paired with a guy, and he said, well, what do you do? And I told him my crazy story. And he said, I happen to be a senior director of blah, 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 blah for a very large consumer data company, like consumer insights data. And then there was a day I was like, well, you know, maybe I just need a data scientist. And I went to bed one night, and I woke up and the next morning. There was a note from a guy by the name of David. And he said, hi, I'm a senior level data scientist, career long data scientist in consumer packaged goods. Do you need pro bono help this summer? This is how I give, or this winter, this is how I give back. So I actually, the moment I decided I need a team, I needed a team. The universe just gave me the team.
Yeah. And I'm like, you manifested it.
Did manifest it. And somebody who had worked for me in a process engineering role in a previous life, he turned up. He had gone back for data science. He built the platform at no cost, the code. A team at Harvard helped guide us a bit. They'd been doing work on impact accounting. They helped guide us a little bit in the code. Yeah, it wasn't like I needed a team and how do I build this? I mean, I had no money. I was waitressing. We were eating from a food pantry. And every penny I had was going into how do we build this? So I built a few PowerPoint slides and then I just didn't shut up about it for anyone who would listen. And eventually somebody looked at me one day and said, oh, okay, I see what you're doing. Like you're trying to create like performance management of an ecosystem around these really critical people points. And they said, we want to do it too. And I was like, great. And at that point I had three PowerPoint slides and an idea. And I don't know how it happened, honestly. Like I don't think it was not planned. I didn't know what I needed, right? I'd sold software and worked for a couple startups, but I don't even think I appreciated it at the time. So it was when I needed to get the first person I hired was an ops person, like a COO, fractional COO. I knew I needed that because I have the crazy founder in me, but the team has grown organically. We have had to like right size and resize as we've figured ourselves out and moved from what I'd call like the beginning through to tech enabled consulting. And now we're scaling those solutions and getting out of anything that's services related. So I have a great team who is, multi startups, exits, VC from the belly, who have been incredible and transformational for us. But in the beginning, it's like, you just hope you keep talking to people and you get to the right one.
Yeah. I mean, most people don't even know where to start. Like a lot of, from my time at 1871, we saw a lot of founders come in with an idea already, but they had no clue like what the first step was. So it's great how the universe just brought you people.
It did. And I think I do believe as the years go on, I believe more and more and more that it is about showing up and continuing to show up and the really hard days. I mean, there have been days when I get to the end of the day and I literally get in my bed and cry for 4 hours and you just, because you don't want to keep going.
Yeah.
But you do,
That's hard.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just one layer, of your founder journey, family, kids, parents, food at the table. Like it's all the things on top of all of everything. So I feel you there for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk money. Fundraising is hard. It's so hard. When I was doing my VC fellowship with Chicago Blend, they told us that, as a VC, you are likely going to be talking to 1,000 founders in 1 year. And you are only going to say yes to 10 of them. And that broke my heart for all the founders out there. It's such a time consuming thing and it's super difficult to get funding. So can you walk us through your experience trying to raise capital for the first time? And, what did you do to even get started?
Yeah. So I'm still learning a lot every day. I won't say I have it mastered. I don't know if anybody, I think no first time founder has it mastered. Our fundraising journey was and is still ongoing. We were founded in 22 and then in, was it 23? Is that when SVB collapsed? Yeah, it was. Huh?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in 22, it was bootstrapping, right? It was me bootstrapping, calling in favors, calling in coffees, whatever I could do. Early 23, we had a little revenue. I think 22, our revenue was like a little over 100K toward the end of the year, Q4. Mm-hmm. 23, we were trying to get an enterprise deal closed. I got to tell you, like, talk about the universe, but I was probably February of 23. We were talking about we needed $500,000. I was walking down the street and I bumped into a guy who he and his wife used to come in to Tavern on Rush and they were customers. And I started talking to him. We started having lunch a couple times a month. And I remember he called me one day in like February of 23 and he said, "How's it going?" You know, he was kind of mentoring and coaching. And I said, "I just wrote a check to Russ, who was our COO. I wrote a check to Russ, put it in a FedEx envelope with a post-it note on it that said, 'Don't cash this till I figure a few things out.'" Like, first time in my life, I very proudly state often that I have an 850 credit score as an adult and in 3 years into entrepreneurship. But I wrote a bad check and I sent it to somebody knowing that I wrote the bad check and just said, "Hang on and I'll get it figured out." And it was right about when, and I didn't have any idea. Like, I didn't come from a cool school. I didn't go to Booth. I didn't go to Northwestern or Stanford or any of those. I went to Kent State. I was just a girl from Ohio who had lots of steel toes. And I said to him, I was like, "I just wrote a bad check and I sent it in an envelope to Russ." And he said, well, "I can help you. Like, I can give you a check." And so it evolved into a check, which ended up being our first, most of our first friends and family round. We deposited the check 2 hours after the SVB collapse in March or April of 23. And I remember asking him if he really wanted to cut the check. Like, "Do you really want to do this still?" And he was like, "Yeah, I'm in." And he actually gave me more than I anticipated. He ended up increasing significantly. And what he gave us was rocket fuel. He'd not done a lot of angel investing, but it allowed us to like really start building the team. And at the time, we were also starting to get revenues. After that, I got to be honest, like the next three checks I took were from people who offered me money and I never asked them for money. So that kind of filled out our friends and family round. Mind you, you know, we all complain about raising money and it's terrible and it's difficult and it's exhausting and you never know like what's around the corner. But I will say I feel like we've been blessed with that beginning piece. We were going to do a seed round last year. I mean, it's just been a nightmare, right? We've got customers and revenue, and those are things that a small team and a founder have to deal with first ahead of getting into fundraising, which is like a full-time job, of course. But I also look at it and I'm really proud of what we've done. I mean, we hit $1 million ARR last year on about 700K of invested capital. We expect to increase that. We were also sort of siloed in some ways into the anti space of all the things that have been political and problematic in the last couple years in the US. Over the last 6-7 months, we've come through a pivot. And probably the one thing I've learned in the last, you know, 90 to 120 days, we reshaped the team. And there are moments when I'm like, listen, I'm a woman. First time founder. I mean, what do we get now? Like 98.5% of the capital goes to other people, mm-hmm. than not to people who look like you or me. Yep. And at times you feel sorry for yourself because you're like, where is my piece of the pie? And the fact that we've accomplished what we did, like hitting that million mark with really low volume of invested capital and moving through a pivot, I'm really proud of that. Like it's, you can't always see it every day. So now we're headed into our first equity round. And I brought on, I think, what is the right team for that, right? It's people with lots of experience who've done this many, many times. And it's just going to be stepping through it, right? I think none of this is easy. This is 100 times harder than I ever thought it would be. I say to people, like 3.5 years ago, I had never even had a job where I had to go into downtown Chicago. I mean, I lived out in Evanston, did my job, traveled all the time, didn't know anybody in the city. And to have built a network, gotten something off the ground in all the last few years, to me, has been tremendous. But it's still, I mean, looking back from where I'm at today and where I was a year ago or 18 months ago or 24 months ago, I understand why some of these funds don't invest in first-time founders. I get that, but there is still something wrong with the capital stack. And Chicago has its own constraints around, you know, population, number of startups that are fundable, number of funds available, dollars available. We're not the Valley. And it makes it really, I think it makes it really hard to raise in Chicago.
That was actually my next question. You know, what has been your experience trying to fundraise here in Chicago?
I'll say that like the last several months, we've been really heads down on like closing channel partnerships and closing revenue and getting to a point where we can go out for like a really serious round. But I agreed. I remember seeing in Cranes, was it like in February, in Q4 last year, was it Chicago or the Midwest? Mm-hmm. There were only like 61 checks and more than half of those were Drive Capital. And like, that's problematic. I mean, the whole capital stack for anybody, the whole capital stack is, I just call it constipated, right? You've got private equity isn't exiting. You've got venture, you've got uncertainty in the economy. And then you layer in that we're in a tough place geographically to begin with.
Yeah.
And I don't believe we're a flyover state. I think everybody is looking for really solid investments. I mean, I've had conversations that I'm gonna try and stay neutral here and like reviewing it. Some of the conversations we've had with some of the funds around Chicago have been, I think there is definitely a bias around women, and 100%, I will say it every day, that the fact that I didn't go to Booth or Northwestern works against me because I don't have those networks. But when I think about the people involved in the entrepreneurship scene in Chicago that want equity, they should be, it's no different than somebody saying, look around at your wedding. Who was at your wedding reception? And if 95% of those people all came from the same wellspring, you need to rearrange your contacts. And so I think that works against us in some cases. And probably once we get to a point where we're, you know, welcomed into some community like that, it won't be as difficult. I mean, access makes a big, big, big difference. But I definitely think there's certainly bias against women. And when I hear female investors tell me things like, you're going to have to work twice as hard. Mm-hmm. Or female founders fail at a rate, non-technical female founders fail at a rate higher than anyone else. And I want to look back at some of those people and say, but you are the person in the position of power now. And if it was tough for you, then like, give me a hand and help me get out of the hole.
They're the ones that are supposed to help you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like too, there's a lot of VCs who want really good deals in Chicago and anywhere really. But my bias is just Chicago because this is where we've been raising. There are good deals in Chicago and that's what they're looking for. But there's a disconnect between where like the coaching occurs and where the VCs are. And I know they've got, like you said, right, 1,000 deals and you'll write 10 checks. Mm-hmm. Nobody's got time to develop. Nobody's got time to give feedback to a founder because the founder's just going to punch back and try and prove our point. But there is a hole there. There's something missing that isn't helping us to develop the ecosystem better. Probably the best, I mean, when it comes to my mental health, probably one of the best groups I've gotten connected with is Midwest Founder Community, which is Angela Damiani. And she's just created something that is, like, I think really special, but it's the fundraising is going to be tough. It's not easy. I mean, I look around and I think of, I'm going to say this out loud and I hope no investor is listening, but a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, I wouldn't have given, like, looking back, knowing what I know now, I wouldn't have given myself $1 million check. Today, different story.
Yeah.
And I think there's a growth curve, and I can see why people give checks to somebody, you know, if you're a founder who's failed, but you've been through it on your second one, I can see why it's easier to get checks because you open up, you know, you open up a spreadsheet and all of a sudden you've got an operating model, which when you did your first startup, you didn't know what that, like, half of that was. You might have known in theory, right? We can all look at it and know in theory what it means, but you're not living it. And I think, how do we accelerate people's learning and ability to really understand how critical the fundraising process is? And I mean, I'll say, personally, I've learned so much. I mean, I'd never had P&L responsibility before. And that is a game changer for how you make decisions. I also think, you know, people who come into entrepreneurship with lived experience, there's a mismatch in how the programming exists within Chicago, and everybody wants you to be from the VC side, I'll say, which is a funny part because VCs want everybody to be a unicorn and do something differentiated that no one else does, but they want us all to be the exact same, where we're just, like, cranking out the multiples and the leverage.
Yeah.
So it's tough. I mean, I think it's tough anywhere, but I think we have some real constraints that are just in the numbers in Chicago, like the multitude of people who are investing. We need more angels, certainly. And it's, you know, we should just create, like, Tinder for angel investing.
That would new idea be, right here. You heard it first.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, 'cause that's about what it is, though, right? I mean, when somebody gets into your sock drawer, that's a whole different conversation. But the beginning is, it's easy. I mean, most VCs will talk to you because they're looking for deal flow. But I have a particular frustration, however, considering that, like, what we are doing at Lunum directly links into people and raising all boats for all people. That the funds here in Chicago, whose taglines are things like, you know, we care about people, people first, all those things, that those funds aren't always as open to our work. So, I mean, we can all be disappointed all day long. You just got to keep going and get up to fight another day and another investor and another and another and another and another and another, and hope you have the team that can continue to lead you through it.
I want to talk about that human side of entrepreneurship, right? Like, it's definitely a roller coaster emotionally as you try to fundraise, as you try to build, or you know, scale. They expect you to, hopefully in 10 years, bring a 10x return. There's just a lot of, you know, a lot of pressure. So when things get tough, you know, what keeps you grounded?
It's a great question. You mentioned it earlier, which is some of it. This job and role is all encompassing. That means for probably over 2 years, it was every day, 365 days of the year, something connected to the business. And then I realized I had to start taking care of myself. And you start to watch like things around you, the relationships, your personal relationships can go sideways if you don't tend to them. I think a couple of things that keep me sane right now, we'll say the last 6 months, I do a couple yoga classes a week. They're yin yoga. They're not like blissy, fancy yoga. They are, I call them like, they're my spiritual moments, right? They're like teachings and sitting in the same pose for 7 minutes and your yoga teacher basically cracking you upside the head, like you can do it and get through. It's how do you build these roots into the ground that nothing ever pushes you over, right? Because it's not so much about self-care. It's about being able to be rooted in the hardest of times. And so that's one thing, like my Saturdays and my Wednesdays, that's where my focus goes. And it's the number one thing I want to do. I probably don't laugh enough or hang out, like, you know, just hang out enough. But I also will say I brought on a new COO a few months ago, about 6-7 months ago, who I jokingly am like, okay, we're going to do the Brené Brown thing. So when I get here in the morning and I say, hey, Peter, I can only give 20% today. And he'll say, I was like, and I need you to say, I can give 70 or 80. And I was like, and if we hit the days where neither of us can give, then we need to back up and have a conversation. And which has been great because he's been incredible about, you know, where I say, like, I jokingly say, like, I'm working part-time in June for the first time in almost 4 years. But you do get to a point where you need to be present to make the right decisions and you can't do everything. And I think that is one of the things I've learned. You know, I'm sure I don't walk enough steps and listen, I also, I don't know what your listener base is like, but right. Like I'm 51 years old. I'm going through menopause. I'm running a tech startup and probably from what I can estimate in like the HR space, like HR people space is one of the fastest growing in Chicago. I have two teenagers. I also have an autoimmune disorder that tells me, my body will tell me when I am doing too much. And if I keep burning it, I'm going to regret it. But all those things combined, you start to have to live a life of, it's humbling to know that you have limits. I do try though to like take a little time for me and enjoy the moments because it is all consuming. This is still requires 95% of my attention. And I believe that every hour of every day that I put into this is worthwhile. But when I'm burnt and tired and not making good decisions, that is like the worst thing for the business. So really right now it's yoga, probably too many cookies, and slap on your weighted vest and go for a 10,000 step walk in the mornings. So that is
a lot. I'm mainly biking and walking to my garden, walking, you know, around the house, but I need to be walking more for sure.
But walking and like just touching nature, because we forget about that too. We need to ground into the, like the earth. I mean, at the end of the day, capitalism can be like yoga. So that's like, I'm like a corporate hippie, but I think capitalism is like, how do we connect? How do we reconnect and unify all of the things that are disconnected? And then everybody can make some money. So
I like how you're framing that. My girlfriend does a lot of yoga and sometimes brings me along, but I prefer to go to like the less impact, more Zen, more recovery yoga. Yeah, it's definitely a good activity to do.
Yeah.
I kind of want to dive a little bit more into just kind of looking at the future and goals. But I'm actually just curious, like what kind of impact, you know, do you hope that Lunum will make in the industry or just in the world in general?
Oh, that's like my favorite question. So today, we know that nearing 100,000 employees across the U.S. are measured differently in how companies look at the value that they create. So those are our customers. Our data shows across roughly 19.5 million employees in the U.S., there's about $1 trillion loss of value because people are leaving their jobs, people are not happy, they're not seen at work. And if we can close the gap for between HR, finance, really operations, all at the same time by giving organizations what they need to build the business case for investing in people and how there's an ROI there and looking at people through more of a long-term value creation model, I believe with every fiber of my being that we can reshape the way that people are accounted for at work and create a world where we have a little bit more understanding of how our workforce practices have a lasting effect on those who we serve, whether they're customers, communities, employees. In short, I mean, the impact I hope to have on the world is that we reshape capitalism to be more people-centric. Not a big dream.
No, not at all. What about goals? You know, what are you hoping to accomplish maybe this year or next year, looking ahead personally, professionally?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. So this year, our North Star this year is we do a scorecard, like we provide a scorecard to companies, which is called Bright Star Verification. It's a measure of their employment impact. And when I use the term impact, I use it in the like a very holistic, long-term influence our business decisions have on the stakeholders. Our North Star this year is scorecards. How many scorecards can we sell and get out the door and get people signed up on the platform? So that's a big one. Revenue, obviously, and closing an equity round is also a great, a great goal for this year. On the personal side, truly just hope to I have my younger daughter is going to be a senior in high school. And I just want to make sure that I am present for her last year of high school as a mom and doing the things that she needs me to do. And, you know, there's 100 goals around, you know, financial success and all these other things, but it's really knowing and it's not easy to measure, but we're trying. But knowing that employees and our partners are getting value from the work we do and that we're appreciating the value that's created by the people who work for us. Focusing on the team is something really important to me. I mean, over the last couple of years, there are times when we've had to move people onto their next chapter or it wasn't what we needed at the time as an organization. But something that hit me particularly hard a couple months ago was having our first employee quit. And after 3 years, that was very hard to have somebody come to me. And it was someone who was in the global South and I don't see how he could have turned down the change. I think goals are to really create the team that we can scale. And we've got a ton of product work ahead of us. So delivery and shipment of product features is huge. Over the next 5 years, my plan is that Lunum is the way that people globally start to look at how they verify whether or not their decisions from a people perspective are having a positive impact for everyone.
Yeah, that's a good North Star to have for sure. And are you in your Series A round right now, or a little bit, or before, or just before?
We're a little before, so we're, we're kind of high revenue for seed, but we're kind of, I'd call us we'll call it a seed round. technically.
Yeah, seed round.
Yeah, we're doing this this round, and then probably, you know, I'm sure there's another one behind it. And yeah, we'll go from there. I'm sure it's going to be easy peasy. Just brighten it out.
Special in Chicago, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I mean, we're looking outside of Chicago at this point.
Of course.
Because I think there's opportunity. Particularly, I think we've got, you know, we're looking for mission aligned people. And that impact space isn't always as broad as we'd like it. And there's nothing I'd love more than to have Chicago money and build this thing in Chicago. But I don't get everything I wish for.
Yeah.
Sometimes it manifests in other ways.
Sometimes you can't get all the manifestation, you know, done in one place.
Yeah.
Well, all right, let's close it off with a piece of advice, either something that you would give your past self, you know, before starting Lunum, or to a new founder, like what kind of advice, what piece of advice would you share?
The most important thing every day is how you feel. If you don't feel good, I don't think you can accomplish what you want to. And people can call it selfish or not, but prioritizing your own health and well-being and mindset are at the top, should be at the number one thing you are prioritizing. The only thing that matters is how you feel, because you cannot grow or become, for me, it's really important to become like the leader I want to become. And I don't think you can do that when you're wiped out and burnt out. So I'd say like your health is probably like your health and mental well-being is probably the number one thing. And we don't always take care of that.
That's the best advice for anyone.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
I didn't think I was going to cry right now in this podcast, but here I am.
You know what it is? I mean, really, like, I mean, you think about it. If you have your health and well-being, you have many problems. If you do not, you have only one problem. And that is to go get your health and well-being back.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that's perfect to close this off. Life has been lifing for a lot of people, especially right now, you know, in the political climate that we're in. And just, in the world. The world is not always kind. It's beautiful, but it's not always kind.
Yeah. Listen, there are people like you and me had a long talk in Austin, and there are people like you and me that we have to keep moving. And I mean, coming out of Austin, I was wiped out and exhausted, and going into it, I was too. But, there were a few people during that trip, you included, and Aransa and some of the WBC crew who breathed new life into me. So, I think we just all have to be kind and keep taking care of each other.
Joe, thank you so much for sharing that and your story with us and insights. Just for the public, whoever's listening, because I don't even know who's listening, but we have people that are listening. Where can they find you? Where can they follow Lunum? And how can they stay connected?
Lunum, yeah, so you can find us at lunum.io, L-U-N-U-M. .io, and you can find me on LinkedIn at the Jill S. Miller. And if you'd like to follow any of my crazy chronicles of autoimmune disease, you can find me on Spondycast, which is my podcast for people living with chronic illness, and on Instagram at Chronically Ambitious. So those are the places you can find me around town.
I will add those all to the show notes so that people have links and can go directly to them. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you so much, and best of luck with your seed round and all the things that are coming. Wishing you the best of luck.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Cece.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Chicago Techies podcast. If you enjoy listening, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review on iTunes. Let's continue the conversation on social media. We are at Chicago Techies on all social media platforms. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time.